On today's show, the latest on chip wars because it's time for GTC 2021. What's going on? What is DPU? What does it do? Does it matter for somebody, for a peasant like me? And Microsoft buys Nuance for, get this, $16 billion. I guess at this point, a million billions doesn't make a difference.
I mean, it would make a difference to me, but not to UTM, because every single time you mention a friend that like work at Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley.
To Ethereum. Welcome to the AI Business Podcast. This is episode 25. Thanks for sticking with us. I am Tian, the video producer of Informa Tech, which I realize I failed to mention for three episodes in a row. So here I am, still around. That's my voice you're listening to. And joining me as always is the deputy editor of DCD. And I do not have time to think of a good intro, good separate title. He is Sebastian Moss.
I'm the man with the insights. Look at this. Look what I just got. Look at that.
Wait, what is that?
It's a praying mantis. Captured, okay. And
I need you to
skewered
stop and bringing dead insects and dead animals in front of the screen. Just because we're doing video, it does not give you the license
to bring
up.
You said now we're doing video. I had to prepare. I got some artifacts.
Don't make this an adult show and tell. Do not make this into an
this
adult
Seb's
old man
deal
show
of
and
the
tell.
Week. So how much?
Yeah. This, gotta love Etsy, £8, and then shipping brought it up to about 15 or so. So not bad, not bad at all.
You know, shout out to our editor, reporter Ben, who brought up Dr. Pepper, which he asked me to remove it from the podcast because his dad is listening, and I'm going to double down and I'm going to mention this again.
Shout out to Mr. Vodecki. Thanks for listening.
Shout out to him and his Dr. Pepper, which has been treating him well. That's his remedy for success. And as always, our global editor and man who thinks he doesn't look his best today, Max Molex.
Yes, hello. So on 2 days ago, we finally had lockdown rules relaxed in the UK, and the summer of love has officially begun.
What is the thing you're most excited about doing?
Ordering beer from an establishment.
Seb, what about you? What is your first trip? Well, I guess you're in East Sussex, and
yeah, there's nothing
I guess
here.
It's kinda,
there's nothing.
You've been posting a lot of church photos and woods.
Oh yeah,
dead
churches.
Woods on your Facebook.
I've been going to churches because they're all empty, so you get some lovely photographs of lovely stained glass, and then going to the woods and letting out my fury and rage on trees.
So you spend a lot of time with God, is what I'm hearing.
He spends a lot of time with me watching and regretting his idea of coming up with life.
All this soft cushion is preparing us for the ongoing heavy segment on the very hard topic, the very aggressive topic, the very violent topic that we call chip wars. They are ongoing segments, so we're going to have this epic theme music coming up. And I'm going to make you a challenge to make this relevant to me for somebody who just, you know, who care about chips, but kind of just like fair weather. I'm like, okay, whatever. And I'm only going to worry about chips when it affects me, when it affects my boiler order or my update or me updating my computer or me getting a new car, you know, some point in the future. Where's my chip? That's the extent of me caring about chips. So break it down to me. What are we looking at?
Okay, well, so I don't need to convince you. Your dear leader, Joe Biden, tried to convince you. Just this week, he had a little summit. He held up a wafer, you know, which is the first president in a while to hold a wafer. Trump looked at one from a distance because I tried to get a nice picture for the magazine. But he held it up and he said, this is infrastructure, because everyone in America knows you guys are currently going through like a theological debate over what infrastructure is and if it's roads
and what America is all about.
Yeah, what is everything? Yeah. And where should your money go outside of wars and HoloLenses? And Biden's saying it should go to anything that means that you are less reliant on another nation. Because right now you are reliant, as we've talked about previously, you're reliant primarily on Taiwan. Around 70% of the world's chips come from Taiwan. Around 90% of the like top-end chips come from Taiwan. Taiwan cannot produce enough because demand is going through the roof right now because of COVID. No one can get stuff. No one can buy their PlayStation. I can't get a boiler. I'm in the cold.
Cold shower.
Yeah, that's how it affects you. But then how it affects you longer term is with GTC and a couple other announcements we're going to talk about this episode. There's a bunch of new cool chips that are redefining how AI is processed, and that will obviously impact you long term because it means that the next big AI models, which aren't really possible and scalable on today's x86 CPUs and GPU combined to a GPU will be possible in the future, and really cool stuff and terrifying stuff will come out of that.
Yeah. If we were going to be dramatic, you know, like, this is the battle for the soul of AI. This is the battle for the next standard infrastructure. And I think NVIDIA is obviously the dominant force. They clearly think they have it in the bag.
The whole Biden thing, he has this massive infrastructure bill. And Battle for the Soul is something he used for his campaign slogan. I don't know, Max, if you're aware of that. He kept saying, folks, we're in a battle of the soul for this nation.
Yeah,
and now you're battle of the soul for AI. Okay, fine.
The battle for the soul thing comes from John Meacham, who's been writing speeches for him while simultaneously appearing on TV and not disclosing his links to Biden. But that's another discussion.
It's a whole other discussion.
Other discussion. Please declare your links. We do not have any links to the Biden campaign.
Well, let's start with NVIDIA's largest announcement. So what NVIDIA did is came out and said they're going to design a CPU for data centers.
ARM CPU for data centers are long, so they're putting themselves as a triple threat here. Three chip company, CPU with this new Grace chip, GPU as we know them for, and DPU. And we can talk about DPUs in a sec afterwards. But Grace is fascinating because it is specifically designed for data centers and even more so designed for large AI models.
No, because the truth is, we don't know much about Grace. There's not much technical detail because it will be based on an ARM architecture that hasn't been even announced yet. And we don't know the details. What we do know, it's definitely going to deliver basically some of the highest bandwidth between the CPU and GPU. You know, like, so if they shoot some screenshots and it looks like this is going to be something made on the board, there's not going to be sockets for processors or sockets for GPUs. This is going to be a single board for everything. And yes, so they're using NVLink 4 interconnect for this, which is their proprietary interconnect. Some other people have been playing around with it because I think the NVIDIA license is out, but they're promising 900 gigabit per second of cumulative bandwidth between the CPU and the GPU. And that's mad.
Yeah, and so the thing here is they, as far as we can tell, they won't be selling this chip by itself. So you won't be able to just buy a Gray CPU. Their whole idea is we're selling this in combination with the CPU, and we're focusing on that interconnect and making sure that there really aren't any memory bottlenecks between the CPU and what probably a couple of GPUs or even more, as we see in the DGX currently, which is like one AMD EPYC chip and then a bunch of GPUs. But as it stands today, memory is the bottleneck. Memory has stopped us really, you know, taking advantage. You have these super powerful chips, but they're just not communicating with each other fast enough.
Yes, and it's just like part of the reason, if you listen to the new generation of chip makers, part of the reason is it's just like all of this stuff, even the stuff NVIDIA is doing right now, it's still based on old architectures, and plenty of people have decided to completely redesign the chip for AI, and some of these people have also made announcements time to GTC, and one of them was Intel's Habana, for example. Habana is an interesting company. Habana has reported a win.
So they made this... They won a contract with the San Diego Supercomputer Center, and they're very much like, look, we've made it, we've hit the big leads, we've got this contract. So I looked into the contract. It's a $5 million grant from the National Science Foundation specifically to buy more experimental, far out there technology. So it's the exact opposite of we're production ready. It's the government saying, we think this thing is weird, let's try it out. Same grant from the NSF led to a Cerebrus chip being bought by Pittsburgh, which is that wafer scale, you know, $3 million chip. So this is still very experimental. But again, Habana, the argument here is they actually have the Ethernet ports, 100 gigabit Ethernet ports natively integrated onto the chip itself. So it's, again, it's all about that memory. It's all about how do we overcome that memory bottleneck, because pretty much every chip company has realized we've got this huge bottleneck, and there's whoever works out how to exploit that and fix that in the best way owns the future of AI processing.
Yeah. But essentially, so NVIDIA at the moment is using its AI architecture to build the world's largest supercomputer codenamed ALP, and this is going to be sort of like the Swiss supercomputing center. At the same time, Intel and its, you know, like its prime AI offering is being viewed as largely experimental and is being evaluated along with products from companies that nobody heard from about, you know, a couple of years ago. So for a while now, NVIDIA has been selling its DGX system, essentially super AI supercomputer in a box. You have one DGX, and they're imminently scalable. You have one DGX box, you have a pretty decent supercomputer for kind of like for running your machine learning workloads. You have 20 DGX boxes, you get one scalable unit, and that is essentially enough to get into the world's top 500 fastest supercomputers. That alone, right? And it's just like, these things are available for sale. I could buy them. You could buy them. Just give us enough money.
Well, yeah. Sell a house, then you can buy a single one.
Yeah. So if you have 4 scalable units or 80 systems in total, you get something to the power of Cambridge One, which is being built in the UK as the UK's fastest supercomputer. So, and if you want to build something faster than Cambridge One, you just add more DGXs. But what NVIDIA announced at GTC is... because we mentioned that it now refers to itself as a 3-chip company, and the third turtle or whatever that it's standing on, elephant?
Pillar.
Leg?
Is DPUs. DPUs, data processing units. So what does NVIDIA, what NVIDIA calls a DPU, most of the industry calls a smart NIC, smart network interface card. And what a smart NIC usually is an FPGA. So Mellanox has been doing something different, and essentially with Bluefin technology and ARM chips. So once again, DPUs are powered by ARM, and the announcement is every single DGX sold going forward will have a DPU on board. So whether you want it or not, whether you think it's useful or not, it will be there. It is there to enable faster networking between DGX boxes. And yeah. Everybody will be getting it as standard. So considering the immense popularity of DGX, we will see loads of DPUs everywhere. And again, smart NICs, not DPUs, are something that's widely used in the in industry. You know, hyperscalers love them. You know, like Microsoft is using them to power Azure. They're available, sort of like on obviously on all the major clouds. And if you're building a high performance machine, you need smart NICs. So, yes, this is technology going mainstream again.
I'm surprised they didn't like brand it smarter NICs or anything. It's about basically putting more processing in smart NICs than was previously there, but still, like, those were the space for, that was always the space for ARM in the data center. ARM was always in the data center on the networking side, but it has always struggled to be in the data center on the core processing side, and that's where Grace, where Ampere, where Fujitsu with A64 and that kind of ilk are now trying to fight and say, look, x86 is too slow, it's too expensive, you have to pay Intel, you have to pay AMD. Why not even make it yourself? Why not buy it from us? But NVIDIA's acquisition of ARM is not guaranteed. We've been so used to, in this very lax regulatory world that we live in, that if a company says we're buying something, it buys it. That might not happen because A, you've got the UK. It's like, well, we don't really do much on tech, especially on the hardware side. Do we want an American company taking it over? That's a big question, even though it's currently owned by a Japanese company. China is obviously worried because of all these sanctions. The sanctions haven't fully worked on ARM because it's a UK-Japanese company, whereas if it's acquired by an American company, that means that the Commerce Department's entity list can say, ARM, you can't work with these Chinese companies. And then the most exciting and hilarious reason for why the NVIDIA ARM deal is still a big question mark over it is what's happening with ARM China, its subsidiary. So ARM set up this subsidiary in China called ARM China. It owns 49% of it. The rest is owned by a bunch of investors, including China's own sovereign wealth fund. And last year, ARM Corporate, ARM LTD, says, we're firing the CEO of ARM China, Alan Wu, due to serious irregularities, and we're going to put these two guys in charge. So Alan Wu said no, which I didn't know you could do when you're fired, but he just said no. And then he fired the two guys that were set to replace him with the exact same quote of serious irregularities, which I find hilarious. And then since June last year, he has still not left. He's still there. Chinese corporate law is kind of weird. So if you own the seal, you get a bit more, like if you own the physical item and have that on you, you have a bit more control of the entity, and no one knows where those are, but he owns them. He's also using ARM China's own corporate funds to fight his case. So his ARM China's board, ARM China's board fired him, and now so he's there's a whole bunch of lawsuits going on right now. They're going on in China, so that you know, adds a complication to it.
Yeah, I should let our employer know when they fire us. We're like,
yeah, just say no. Just say no.
And no, then, thanks.
Yeah,
I'll come back Monday.
See how far that gets you.
Yeah. So I've got two questions. One is about just NVIDIA buying ARM. Is this like a scenario where like Thanos is collecting all his Infinity Stones? If he finally collect that one, he kind of just own all the power. He can do whatever the heck he wants, and no one. He can reverse time. He can create illusion. It sounds that way, right? It sounds like, given that this, we label this under chip war, so there is a winner and loser, or like the Cold War, nobody wins.
It's,
but
it's buying Switzerland,
right?
Jensen,
I don't know Huang, what that means as an American.
Jensen Huang is like buying, I don't know who stays out wars over there, Mexico. But like, he couldn't fundamentally change ARM's licensing business model without like just destroying the company he bought. That'd be a weird thing to do. It'd be like buying Google search engine and then making it paid for. But equally, he can give himself preferential treatment. He can make it so that the direction ARM goes in is the direction that Grace 2 wants ARM to go in.
And even besides, without acquiring ARM, NVIDIA has been one of the most successful companies with ARM architectures. It has been building it into its products. And you know what other company relies on ARM for some of its products? It is Intel. Yes. Now, Intel uses them in Ultra FPGAs, which is a very, very interesting kind of tidbit, because like rest of it is proprietary, and but they still need those open source cores in there. Even the mighty Intel can't, you know, like deal with some of its products without ARM. So
I think, to put it in perspective, more than 180 billion ARM chips have been shipped. It's just that ARM doesn't make much money on a per-chip basis because they're just a licensor, whereas NVIDIA on its GPUs makes a hell of a lot of money. Some would say too much money per chip, but that's another conversation. But it's more they will have soft power. They're not going to fundamentally change ARM and make it so that you can only buy ARM chips from NVIDIA. That would kill ARM. That would just destroy the $40 billion they've spent. But they will have control over its destiny and where it puts its focus. And they will potentially have insight into other companies when they're collaborating with ARM, which is obviously a very legally dubious area. So not great for anyone else.
If you're thinking that, you know, like proprietary technology stacks are bad and vendor lock-in is bad, and it's bad to buy all your stuff from NVIDIA, you can buy all your stuff from somebody else. And one of the companies that emerged to offer you this alternative, top to bottom, software, hardware, services, the big boxes, is our good friend Samba Nova.
Also formerly on the podcast.
Yes.
Suspiciously so, just on the podcast. Right. Obviously, we're listened to by SoftBank's Matsuyoshi-san, because as soon as the podcast went out, he plonked hundreds of millions into the bank accounts of Samba Nova, because he doesn't like holding onto the money himself.
I'm starting to think that Matsuyoshi-san is one of our unique listeners from that episode. One of our, right? We got about 1% from Japan, 1% from Croatia, 1% from Thailand. So,
well, Son-san, if you're listening, thanks, man.
I think if you want a real deep dive into the Samba Nova business model and how it works, go back and listen to that episode. But in brief, Max, what's the Samba Nova pitch?
Yeah. So Samba Nova has developed a proprietary chip called Cardinal, and I think it's another one of those wafer scale creations. So it's super big, lots of transistors, incredibly high density. It's so proprietary that they decided not to give it to other vendors to develop servers. They said you can only buy it as part of our system called DataScale. DataScale is a big box. Then there's the Dataflow kind of like framework / software that supports the entire thing. So the idea is if you're used to running your machine learning workloads or GPUs, for example, you don't need to relearn anything. So all of your tools are going to be transitioned on the Samba Nova sort of architecture, and you're going to feel right at home. Now, what Sambanova is doing differently, though, they're primarily offering this as a service. They don't want to sell you the actual box, which I find very, very interesting because, you know, like, this means they have to plow lots of money into manufacturing every time they need to deliver the service, right? And it's just like, and you know, like, customers can check out at any time. So this is, it is a risky bet for a young company, you know, delivering something as a service. You almost got, guys, why are you doing to this to yourself? Well, just sell the boxes, seriously. But it does allow people to try it at a very low cost. It is available. Yeah. So they want you to buy it as a service. But I think if I understand this correctly, it can be deployed on your premises. So this solves like privacy issues and stuff like that.
They deploy it at your premises, but you don't own it. You pay them $10,000 or more a month. But you only pay for the usage. It's just a minimum of $10,000. So if you install it and then don't use it, I guess you don't have to pay. Probably have to pay some, like, the 10,000.
So this is Cardinal?
So it's not just Cardinal, yeah. So Cardinal, and it again goes to what we're talking about with Habana, goes to what we're talking about with Grace, that it's all about memory. So the idea with them is their software and their architecture beyond just the chip is what tries to handle the memory bottleneck. So we don't just sell the chip, we sell the data flow, server architecture, and then the data scale, like, broader kind of package.
For anybody who's curious about what we're talking about, what we're referencing to, this is Business Podcast episode 21. Chips should work smarter, not harder. Max, you came up with that one, so I thought I'd mention it. And this is published on March 24th. So, of course, if you want to get paid, like Rodrigo Leon got paid, you know.
Come on the podcast.
Get in touch.
Pay for us to get on the podcast. Now we're starting to charge. We don't let people get on free anymore. So Sambanova will be the last one.
Absolutely. Now, what makes this story a bit of a sensation, and you know, like, why we keep talking about Sambanova, is they only emerged from stealth in at the end of last year. So before about November timeframe, nobody even knew these guys existed, and you know, like, by April they have a 5 billion company. So this is what's interesting, and this is kind of like, it's almost twice of what was the normal ceiling for the previous kind of wave of big chip investments, which we saw. For example, Graphcore, I think, was a little bit over 300 million, and I think one of the big Chinese startups also got a little bit over 300 million. And that was the kind of the ceiling. That was, everybody thought that was a large amount. And this is almost twice that.
And this is end of Chip Watch. Do we need a new song? This is from Chip Wars.
There's no song at the end of Chip Wars. Any other song, Chip Wars is...
After there's just blood and carnage.
There should be like a peaceful anthem. Союз нерушимый, республик свободна, навеки сплотила Великая Русь. Microsoft has done something surprising last week. Nuance is interesting because it's a Frankenstein monster built, glued together from acquisitions. And you know, like, probably the most famous and the most important was Dragon Naturally Speaking, which they picked up at the bankruptcy auction, and which kind of kicked off, you know, like, the their speech machine learning efforts. So by now, Nuance has become huge in this space. You know, like, it has grown as the AI kind of like based communications market has grown. They do robots, they do personal assistants, they do chatbots, they do digital customer experience. They're a digital customer experience company these days. And some of their largest deals are actually in healthcare markets and telecoms. And these are kind of like very, very, you know, like progressive areas where AI is really being deployed on the customer service side. We've all been there, we've all been victims of it. And it's Microsoft's largest acquisition since its acquisition of LinkedIn. Yes. And the thing is, like, when the LinkedIn acquisition was announced, I and many others thought this was dumb. This was a dumb, dumb deal. And it was a lot of money for essentially a dying social network.
And they figure out how to make money.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so what does that mean for language model going forward for Microsoft? What is their strategy going into this?
I mean, what I find interesting is it kind of felt like we'd got to the point where Microsoft could have built decent natural language processing in-house. So why are they spending $16 billion and assuming another $3.7 billion in debt on top of that? So, like, essentially round it to $20 billion they're spending on a company that does something you think Microsoft would have got down. But Max,
I've got an answer to that, because... Yeah. Well, but basically, I've talked about the boring corporate stuff Nuance did, but actually, quietly and in the background, they have powered kind of like very famous digital assistants. They've, for example, they're responsible for the technology behind Siri, and Siri...
And Siri sucks.
You say sucks, I say state of the art. You know, who really knows? No, but the thing is, it's just like for the things, top of the line things that everybody is convinced digital assistants can do. They're not fantastically useful, but you know, like they're somewhat useful. And for the things people expect from them, Nuance is very, very, very good.
And so what Microsoft did a couple of years ago is they've started for their cloud service. They've been launching specific verticals, specific little industry. And Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare was the first one. They've done very well in that. And part of that at the time was they partnered with Nuance. So Nuance has been running on Microsoft Azure and has been sold through it. So Microsoft has been able to see how successful it has been. And so in their contract negotiations, they can go, hang on a second, we're already, you know, these guys are a huge customer of ours. Something must be going well for them. Maybe we should acquire them. They already seamlessly run on us, so it's quite easy to integrate it. It's going to run under the Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare banner. So while, like Max said, they do Siri, they do some telecom stuff, I think healthcare is the biggest aspect. It's all about doctors sitting with patients, and they can just chat and focus, and in the background, that's transcribed. Because that happens a lot, and at the moment, a lot of it is sent overseas to India, in particular for transcription. And sometimes you have like highly qualified Indian doctors getting paid like minimum wage to transcribe calls in US hospitals. US healthcare system has tons of money sloshing around from somewhere. No one knows where all that money comes from. It's surely not from, you know, bilking out individuals. That would never happen. But why not let Microsoft have some of it?
Okay, I will tell you about one aspect of Nuance that many people probably don't know about, and that's voice biometrics and behavioral security. Because having those AI technologies in-house and having all that voice data, this is one of the things they're working on. So one, the idea of voice authentication as the easiest form of authentication. So when you're calling your bank, your doctor, whatever, you know, like it runs a tiny little script and it makes sure that it's really you and it knows it 100%. Two, they're doing, because they're so big on kind of the customer experience, they're doing by behavioral biometrics. So like it's not just your voice, but they just like how you interact with the websites, for example. So like it, again, stuff runs in the background, you don't notice it's there, but the bank knows that, you know, like the person that punched in the login details is the actual person that holds the account. This has lots of potential, and again, these are horizontal technologies that can be integrated into every single industry, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be, because these are nice things, you know, like this is not something, this is not AI that watches you, this is not surveillance, this is not some kind of weird mumbo jumbo magic analytics. This is something that's good for you as the end user.
And going to what Max was saying, this is being a nice to have. Suddenly I realized my bank app has like a voice assistant, which I never thought I'd use, but sometimes it's helpful, so I don't have to go through three menus trying to find one single number, you know. So I see this as something that, you know, it would be like just more service tech on, you know, LinkedIn, more service tech on Microsoft services, and suddenly we're just rely on, slowly we become more reliant on it. And it's not something where I'm raising my eyebrows and say, wow, that's a big change. I'm just looking at it and like, okay, this will probably come back. I'll probably feel the presence of this acquisition a couple years down the line.
You'll probably be with that enterprise stuff. I don't, you know, Cortana flopped and sucks. No one uses it. We talked about in one of the early episodes, Xiao Ice, and you know.
Oh, yeah.
Microsoft. She's still 16.
No, she's 18 now. It's a safe, solid AI enterprise bet where Microsoft can very easily predict how much money they're going to be able to get out of it. It's like Max said, it's not wishy-washy. It's not kind of newfangled, look at this. It's these guys have been doing speech recognition for a very long time. Either themselves or, like Max said, through their Franken monster.
So let's talk about where can people find us, and specifically if you want to find the episode about Xiao Ice. See, she's making a comeback. She's on episode 6, waiting for you to take a listen to, out of our long catalog of stories and that we've covered.
Go on, Matt, I know you want to.
Anyway, if you want to find any of the catalog, you can go on to AIbusiness.com. Under resource, you can find podcast, and that under podcast, you'll find all the previous
episodes.
Or on your
podcast app. Just scroll up on whatever you're listening to this on. Or scroll down, depends which way. But do that.
Yeah, however you like it. Our listeners growing, so if you want to say hi. So if they want to say hi to us, how can they reach you, Max?
Yes, you can find me on AI Business. You can email me at max@aibusiness.com, and you can find me on Twitter at maxsmolax.
And Tinder's still active for you now that the lockdown is
over? I'm about to switch it on, but I need good pictures, and I can't get good pictures if I look like this. So yeah, I'll need a haircut.
Then good luck with that. Okay, and Seb, you?
I'm just horrified at imagining Max on Tinder. So, you know, stay safe out there, people. You can find me warning about that and making fun of his terrible hair on @SebMoss on Twitter.
And you can find me on the LinkedIn, Lee LinkedIn, owned by Microsoft, at TIENCHIFU, Tianchifu.